Our fourth case for argument this morning is Dickerson against Belleville Area Community College District, number 522.
May it please the court. My name is Edward Sevcek, and I represent the plaintiff, Robert Dickerson, in this case. As your honors are aware, this was a case brought against Mr. Dickerson's employer under the Americans with Disabilities Act, alleging that the employer discriminated against the plaintiff because of a disability in failing to award him a promotion, and then retaliated against him by terminating his employment after he engaged in protected activity under the ADA. I would like in my oral presentation today to talk about the aspect of the case involving retaliation. I think that's by far the strongest case, and I think that we have put together enough evidence to withstand summary judgment as to the issue of retaliation. Mr. Dickerson started working for Southwestern Illinois College in 1999 as a permanent part-time employee. He was tested in the course of this litigation by one of our experts, sort of by way of background, I guess, and found to have a full-scale IQ of 67, and he was found to be moderately retarded. And our experts concluded that he had cognitive deficits in various mental areas of his ability to function. Now, whether or not, in fact, he was disabled is really not even relevant in the retaliation aspect of the case. But nonetheless, there's evidence that he is mildly or moderately retarded. Anyway, he started working in 1999. He worked a number of years with very little discipline imposed upon him. There was one incident in July of 2006 where he received a verbal warning regarding securing property. He received another verbal warning in April of 2007 regarding a need to communicate with his supervisors.
Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
What damages are you seeking in this case?
Well,
an arbitrator reinstated your client. I take it he's working for Belleville still.
He is, Your Honor. And so he was awarded back pay also.
And he was awarded back pay.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that leads to my question, what damages you're seeking?
Well, issues of back pay and front pay, as well as attorney fees and cost of litigation, are all equitable relief.
Attorney's fees are not a remedy. If you win the case, you can get attorney's fees.
But in order
to win the case, you have to recover damages. You can't get back pay because the arbitrator awarded it. You can't get front pay because he's still employed by the defendant. That leads to my question, what remedy are you seeking?
Well, I apologize for approaching your question maybe by indirection, or when I was getting to that. When you try one of these cases in front of a jury, the jury initially decides on damages, and damages can be inconvenience, embarrassment, humiliation, those intangible aspects of whatever happened. And that would be the type of damage that we would be seeking in the case. It's only after the plaintiff wins the case that then the court would address issues of back pay and front pay. So that would be the nature of the damages we would be seeking in the case. Well, just to continue, in the fall of 2007, Mr. Dickerson applied for a full-time position. He had applied before and had been turned down. He actually went and spoke to the Board of Trustees of the school in an open meeting on July 17 of 2007, I'm sorry, October 19 of 17 of 2007, and complained to the board and complained that he was being passed over for this promotion because of his characteristics. And it's our contention that that is protected activity under the ADA, under the employment discrimination laws. The law is clear that protected activity does not have to consist only of filing an actual complaint or charge of discrimination. Informal complaints can be considered protected activity. No magic words are required, and we think here He was engaging in protected activity when he complained to this board on October 17, 2007. He met sometime after that with several officials of the school and repeated his complaints. That was also protected activity. Within weeks of his complaint to the board, his direct supervisor, Ken Diefenbaugh, was given the paperwork to do a written evaluation of him. This was the first time he was ever subjected to a written evaluation. We're not contending that doing the evaluation was in retaliation. Apparently, that was part of a program that the school had instituted to evaluate its part-time employees, which it had never done before. But nonetheless, the evaluation was done within weeks, and actually it was signed approximately 2 months after he first voiced his complaints or engaged in protected activity. The written evaluation, despite the fact that Mr. Dickerson had worked for the school for any number of years, apparently successfully, very little discipline, thought he was doing a good job. Nonetheless, the evaluation came back as an extremely negative evaluation. As a result of that evaluation, his immediate supervisor, Mr. Diefenbaugh, established what are called correction action plans, which Mr. Dickerson was supposed to then work on to improve his work performance. And Mr. Diefenbaugh, who ended up being one of the decision makers with regard to deciding to terminate the plaintiff, was aware of the fact that he had complained to the board, as well as had subsequently met with other school officials regarding this. So after these correction action plans were instituted, Mr. Diefenbaugh then began subjecting the plaintiff to different scrutiny than he had before. He started taking notes, as will be indicated in the transcript of the arbitration hearing that was conducted, which he had never done before. But at the same time, Mr. Diefenbaugh, nor nobody at Southwestern Illinois College, actively engaged Mr. Dickerson in trying to improve his alleged failure to perform his job properly. If you review the documents regarding these correction action plans and read the testimony, it's clear that the purpose of this is supposed to be to improve the employee's conduct on the job and work performance, and it contemplates that the employer will counsel the employee, work with the employee to get him to improve his work performance. But nonetheless, after these correction action plans were instituted, there was no further discipline imposed on Mr. Dickerson. He was not counseled. He was not cautioned and told that his work was not improving. And when he was reevaluated in July of 2008, Mr. Diefenbaugh made the decision, along with the other decision makers, David Bish, Mr. Hilgenbrink, and Larry Friedrich, that he should be terminated because he had not improved his work performance. It's our contention that all of that procedure, from the extremely bad job performance or job evaluation on to being terminated, was all conducted to retaliate against him for engaging in protected activity.
So Mr. Friedrich, who was the VP of Human Resources, he was involved in the hiring, the firing decision, the hiring,
yes, Your Honor,
firing decision.
They admitted that in their answers to interrogatories, and there was testimony by their own employees to that effect, that Mr. Diefenbaugh was actually told, go talk to Mr. Friedrich, and he did, and Friedrich said, go ahead and terminate him. And Your Honor is probably also aware then that Mr. Friedrich is the man who, with the knowledge that Mr. Dickerson had complained to the board, had hired an attorney who ordered a copy of his employment file, had filed a formal charge of discrimination in February of 2008. Mr. Friedrich is the man who, when asked by Mr. Dickerson, commented, you shouldn't be suing your employer. We think that this case is similar to a case decided by this court in 2004 named Stephen Lang versus Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. The case is cited in our brief. It's our contention that after the issue of retaliation, we have put together sufficient circumstantial evidence to establish a direct case of discrimination. In that Lang versus DCFS case, Mr. Lang was an African-American who filed a Title VII claim against his employer, alleging that he was retaliated against. In that case, the court recounted the facts where Mr. Lang first filed a grievance in his own behalf and in behalf of other African-Americans working on the same team, alleging that they were discriminated against because of their race, because black members of the team were not given cell phones, whereas white members were.
Thank you, counsel.
All right, Your Honor.
Mr. Horner.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Garrett Horner. I represent Southwestern Illinois College, Illinois Community College, District Number 522. I wanted to begin.
What is the correct name of the defendant? I understand Southwestern Illinois College, but the name on the briefs is Belleville Area Community College District. Is that its current name?
The legal name from the legislature, Your Honor, is Community College District Number 522, and named by the Board of Trustees. It was originally Belleville Area College in 2000, which would have been a year after Mr. Dickerson started. It was renamed by the board a more regional name rather than a specific city name, Southwestern Illinois College. So that the legal name is Southwestern Illinois College.
I'm not asking about the name of the college. I'm asking about the name of the college district. What is its name?
Well, it's Community College District Number 522.
So this whole Belleville area thing is not part of its name?
No longer.
And you? No longer. Why did you use a name that hasn't existed for some time on your brief?
I put formerly known as for clarification purposes.
No, you put down that the college was formerly known as.
Yes, it's Community College District 522, Southwestern Illinois College. It's the only college that's in the district.
Fine. There are two legal entities here, right? The college district and the college. Each of them has a name. I understand the name of the college. You're telling me the name of the district is simply Community College District 522, that Belleville area is not part of the district's name.
Correct, but there is.
So why did you put it in your brief that that was or is its name?
It was identified as in the caption of the lower court.
Look,
case.
If the plaintiff filed a complaint suing a bunch of jerks known as Southwestern College, you wouldn't put in the caption a bunch of jerks known as Southeastern or Southwestern College.
Or maybe
you
would.
Put in the real name, all right?
Well, I was just trying to show that there had been a change of the name during a period of time of his employment. The actual name is Southwestern Illinois College, Community College District 522. It's the only college.
Now you've told me still another name.
No, there's not two entities.
Right. I would like the parties to file a supplemental statement addressing, it now sounds like, two questions. One, how many defendants are there? One defendant? Two defendant? Three defendants? Your brief suggests there are three, the college district, the college, and the board of trustees as separate entities. How many defendants are there? And two, what are the names of the defendants, the real legal names of the defendants, not what people call them colloquially?
Yes, right.
Okay?
Thank you. Plaintiff appellant's argument related to retaliation, but in the context that the elements are similar for discrimination purposes, it would address both. Let me start with the Lang decision, since that's where we ended. The Lang decision is distinguishable from this case, Your Honors, because Lang involved an initial performance evaluation that happened within a matter of days of the dispute between the parties. In this case, I want to talk about the distinguishing characteristics of the performance evaluation, in particular, the fact that the record is clear that after a creation of a new collective bargaining agreement that covered the part-time physical plant staff, of which plaintiff is a member, it was decided that the policy would be changed whereby the full-time employee evaluations would also be given to the part-time employee evaluations. The evaluations coincided with the anniversary date of the employee. In this case, the district court did note that the evaluation of Mr. Dickerson that was 2 months after his speech to the board coincided with his anniversary date. He was one of maybe a dozen that had already been evaluated, roughly 10 before him, and that they were likewise evaluated on their anniversary date, and that his mediocre performance was already established in previous attempts that were rejected of his application to be promoted to a full-time position. With respect to his statements that were made to the board at its meeting, I would note that the decision maker here, as recognized by the district court and properly so, was Ken Diefenbaugh, who was the assistant director of physical plant, who was the immediate supervisor of Mr. Dickerson. And Mr. Diefenbaugh testified, and it's undisputed, that he didn't attend board meetings, that he didn't get board minutes, that he had never been advised of any decision. So Mr. Diefenbaugh, who's the decision maker at issue here, had absolutely no knowledge of this alleged protected activity in which the plaintiff claims to have engaged. So the retaliation in this situation is not there because it has to be something that's known to the decision maker.
Why? That line of argument sounds incompatible with Straub against Proctor Hospital.
Well, in order, Your Honor, it's our position that in order for the defendant to have liability for retaliation, there has to be knowledge of the.
Yes, knowledge by whom? Knowledge by people involved in the decision, or, in your view, knowledge by the ultimate decision maker?
Knowledge by the decision maker.
That's why I say that line of argument appears to be incompatible with Straub against Proctor Hospital. Is there some way that your argument can be reconciled with the Supreme Court's decision?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the district court correctly noted that
the district court acted long before the Supreme Court handed down Straub. It is a controlling case on that particular question.
Again, Your Honor, I would ask for leave to brief that issue.
We will invite separate briefs if we think that's necessary.
Okay. With regard to both the discrimination and retaliation claim, plaintiff, let me back up. Although the court went straight to the pretext issue, because this court's review is de novo and because this court can affirm for any reason in the record.
For what it's worth, the Supreme Court decided Straub 5 weeks before you filed your brief. We would rather expect counsel to be at least current with the Supreme Court's cases. So, no, I don't think we'll be inviting separate briefs on that question.
With respect to the prima facie case, which I'll address because this court can affirm for any reason of the record and its standard is de novo, the plaintiff has not established that any similarly situated employees without an alleged disability or who have not filed EEOC charges or engaged in any other protected activity were treated differently. In fact, the plaintiff did not even address this element of the prima facie case at its summary judgment stage and its responses. What is implied in this case is that there was some nepotism involved related to an employee that was hired with respect to Joseph Evansko. But as this court has noted, nepotism is not evidence of discrimination under ADA. It's not evidence of retaliation because it's actually deemed to be evidence of a non-discriminatory reason. And in this situation, the brief plaintiff also references another employee for the first time, and that's Tony Beyer. This court has explained that with respect to the similarly situated employee prong, that the employee must be similarly situated in all material respects. Mr. Beyer is a full-time physical plant employee with a different job description, so it's not a similarly situated employee, and that prima facie element has not been met. With respect to the legitimate expectations of the job of defendant, the evidence in this case is clear that from the record that there is a history of performance issues, that there is unsatisfactory performance evaluations, corrective action plans that were referenced by plaintiff counsel, and there's also failure to follow through with the corrective action plan. As far as the allegations of failure to counsel the employee, as the district court properly noted, the court or the administration at the college attempted to counsel him with respect to the corrective action plan, and plaintiff's counsel refused to sign it and abruptly walked out. With as far as the articulating a legitimate business reason, again, both with respect to the discrimination and the retaliation, those reasons have been articulated. Specifically with respect to the failure to hire or promote, the articulated reason is that better qualified applicants with better work ethic were hired. And with respect to the termination, the failure to correct the deficiencies in the evaluation and the corrective action plan was the basis for that termination. For the reasons set forth in the brief, defendant appellees respectfully request that this court affirm the district court summary judgment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.